Let's get into it.
Wait. Trash truck's outside. Coming to take your fucking skills away, Justin, down to the dump where they belong. You're fucking
you fucking idiot.
From the Vox Media podcast family.
Comes my name is Justin. So fresh Napoleon Dynamite reference.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best games of the month.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I really do know the best games of the month.
My name is Chris Plant, and I definitely am the winner who knows the games.
My name is Russ Rushing, and I know the best game of the week.
Russ just sounded like the beginning of an Assassin's Creed game. Hey-o! Okay, this is the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in food, fine wine, culture, resort destinations, video games, fashion, golfing destinations, luxury watches, and so much more. But today we're going to be just mainly focusing on video games. You know, guys, they've come a long way since Pac-Man. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they're pretty advanced these days.
I played a game, Justin, and I swear to God, you guys, it had two Pac-Mans in it.
What?
So they like learned how to like double that amount of technology at
did
least.
Did one of them have a bow, or was it
one of them did have a bow? Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Thank you,
Griffin. Have you seen this game? So it's Tetris, but it's also another game that's like Tetris. At the same time.
Except it's not. Let's do honorable mentions so we can talk about Tetris v. Puyo Pop.
Okay.
The really historic Supreme Court case that established a truly really incredible super precedent. That's the law of the land. I don't like Puyo Pop is the problem. I wish I could switch that out and have it just be Tetris versus Super Tetris.
Or Tetris versus Dr. Mario, unless Dr. Mario is just Puyo Pop.
Or Tetris versus Wetris. That's what I. Or Hattris.
That one would
Tetris
be good
versus
too.
Hattris versus Wetris.
Yeah, I play that game, and I just need to spend some time with it. But I just like play it, and I'm like, fuck yeah, Tetris. And then Puyo Pop comes on, and it's like, I don't know how to do anything here. The only time I played it was in the New York office against Nick, who's like apparently. Like grandmaster level Tetris player and like a very good Puyo Pop player also, and so I just got like fucking cream. Now, if it was not Super Tetris, what did I say? Super Tetris, Tetris Attack is what I meant. That's my favorite fucking puzzle game of all time. I'll play that one for days. So I wish I had more options in switching those out, but it's a really fucking. I'm amazed at. I'm probably gonna pick it up just because I'm kind of blown away at like how much like content there is. It reminds me a little bit of Tetris DS. Which had all that like buck wild shit, like the Metroid level of Tetris, and like it had like all of these different like Nintendo mashup Tetris levels.
What?
It was a really really fucking good game.
So talk to me about real quick. Explain, because I watched you guys play it, and I know how Tetris works, and I relatively know how Puyo Pop works. So it bounces between the two in the middle of a single match, right?
So there's a bunch of different options that you can do, right? There's like, if you're playing competitively, you can play swap mode where it just like you set the intervals. I think it starts at like a minute. So after a minute of Tetris, both of you switch to Puyo Pop, or you can just do a straight up and down. Like one of you plays Tetris, one of you plays Puyo Pop.
Wait,
or
what?
Both of you play Tetris. Yeah. I mean, it's, but the way
it's
that
like,
it balances.
Score that?
Well, it's survival, right? So if you do like a crazy chain and Puyo Pop, or you set up like a big combo, then it drops Tetrominoes.
Yeah, the balance.
It was pretty well, but I mean, it's hard for me to judge the balance because Nick is fucking way better at this than I am. But it seemed pretty well balanced. There's also like handicap settings, which when we turned on, like I actually was able to hold my own. But then there's like a big story mode, and we actually only played the demo version, which is out. So go check it out now. And I've sort of like been following along with like all the extra shit that you can do in the game. But, it was fun. I've never really gotten deep into a Tetris game before, but maybe I'm just so desperate for more Switch games. Maybe this will be the jam.
There's a really good one coming out next week.
There's a Wonder Boy, remaster.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the Wonder Boy game. What did you say, Chris?
I was going to say there's a really good game coming out next week, but we're going to save it for May with Tumbleseed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all right.
I might have broken embargo by saying that's very good.
Justin, have you played Wonder Boy or heard of it before?
No, I heard him talk about it on the Bombcast today.
It's weird because it's like, I had never heard of it, but everyone at GDC was so excited about it. And it's just one of those like weird European things that I feel like never made the jump to America.
It was a Master System game, right? So that was obviously not a heavy hitter over here.
Yeah, it's like Asterisk and Obelix. No one really cares.
So wasn't it? It's from Japan, right?
I think it was developed by European developers.
No. Why are we talking about this if we don't know fucking anything about it?
Listen to us guess about video
games. Okay, what other good games?
I have been playing. I started a game yesterday, actually. You guys into idle games here? You guys ever fuck with idle games before?
Those are the games that
play themselves, right?
Well, clickers, you know, like clickers. You guys ever play?
Yeah, cookie clickers. I thought you meant like Japanese idols.
No,
yeah, I also thought you were talking about like Idolmaster. I played like a bunch of Bitcoin Billionaire. That's probably the deepest I got in. That's a good one.
I'm playing a new one because every once in a while I like to get down with one. I find it kind of soothing. But there is a new one out that is it's Office Space, the idle game, which is pretty buck wild, mainly because it is insane how well the idea of Office Space maps to a clicker. So, you know, in Office Space, the thing is they create this software that carves off like fractions of pennies.
Yes.
And those add up to big money over an extended period of time. Well, the Office Space idle game is basically that idea. You're earning pennies for each floor of the Inditech offices that you build out. And like any good idle game, you're investing that money back into the floors, and then eventually, and this is again like one of those areas that it melds really well. When you get far enough, you can ask Milton, the Stephen Root character, to burn the place down, which he does in the movie, but it's also a perfect metaphor for idle games that have to have that like destroy everything you work for, but get a bonus that makes it go way faster the next time and just progressively build out from there. It's not doing much super innovative. The only thing that's kind of interesting is you can buy character packs so that come with that are all characters from the movie, and each one of those has its own like
all
bonuses.
Those memorable characters,
all those beloved movie characters.
Michael Bolton.
Michael Bolton,
the other ones.
Michael Bolton, the guy, you know, the main guy, Rob.
Yeah.
I think it's his name. Jennifer Aniston's character. The lady who says corporate accounts payable, Nina speaking just a moment. I guess her name's Nina. It's right there in the thing.
The guy from Scrubs.
Guy from Scrubs is up in the mix.
Wow.
But there's anyway, a guy from Scrubs in the mix?
John C. McGinley is one of the Bobs. if you have a place in your heart for Office Space and a place in your heart for idle games, and hi, you found him. Hello, ladies.
Just like hey. I didn't. When I woke up this morning and I made my coffee and I took my son to daycare and then I sat down at the mic, at no point during this morning did I expect to be hearing about and talking about Office Space quite as much as I have in the past few minutes. It sounds like a good game. It's just like, wow, Office Space. It's not a good game.
It's an idle game. It's a pretty good idle game. If you like idle games, they're all pretty much built around the same thing. I will say this one, idle games are built like the strength of an idle game is how it is able to evolve over time, like how much new content you see over time. I think the best example of this is the millionaire one, the one where you make a bunch of money.
Bitcoin Millionaire?
Adventure Capitalist.
That's also all of them. Yeah.
But that one
Candy Box. Was spectacular.
Candy Box is amazing. I mean, that's like the best. And Cookie Clicker is amazing to that too, where you're making like dark grandmas making space cookies and shit like that.
There's some decent like RPG takes on this too, like Tap Titans and shit like that. Yeah. On the phone.
Soda Dungeon is one of my favorites. That's a really good sort of
game. Soda Dungeon. It had a little more RPG stuff.
Yeah, But it's fun. If you like that style of game, and you know if you do, you know right now listening to this if this is your jam or not. If this is not if you do not fit that Venn diagram of Office Space idle game fans, like you are not going to enjoy this product. But otherwise, check it out.
I played Flint Hook. I bought it yesterday so I could talk about it on the podcast and play it, because it seemed, all the trailers made it look really fucking hot. If you played Mercenary Kings, it's by the same dev, Tribute.
They released this really cool trailer of them showing the Flint Hook dude running through the first level in Bionic Commando.
Yeah, it was really, really great. So yeah, as the name and Russ's interjection suggests, you have a grappling hook and you use it to connect to and like sort of fly around these different points. The game is like, the game's slick as hell. It's got this like, it's got some of the best pixel art I've seen in a real long time, and the soundtrack is fucking banging. And you are this little character. I'm not exactly sure what the character is. There's like some deep lore to Flint Hook that I don't quite understand. But you have a grappling hook and you have like a blaster pistol, and you have a belt that allows you to slow down time. And
wait, how would you describe this belt?
It's a time belt, okay. I guess. Mm-hmm. They actually do call it the time belt at certain points in the game, which is magnificent. So the whole like structure of the game is you are this like sky pirate, this space pirate, and you fly and you're hunting down bounties. And the way that you do that is you go and you siege an enemy ship. And these ships are comprised of these fairly small, like square or rectangular rooms. Kind of imagine how maps were structured in Rogue Legacy, and you're mm-hmm. kind of getting the picture. And also envision Rogue Legacy because they are randomized. You have your choice of like which ship you want to attack, and you will see like what modifiers are available on the ship. So like one ship will have like a laser grid in it, and one of them will have, you'll just know that there will be extra enemies in this one. And so you choose which modifier you want to go down, and there's difficulty rankings for each one. And so you go in and you fight through these randomized maps, and like the game, like playing the game is slick as fuck. Like hooking between these different points and like flying through the air and like turning on slow motion so that you can dodge some enemy bullets and like taking them out as you are still like flying through the air, and then hooking onto another platform and zipping up to, like, it's really easy to get these like really cool fluid combos going. And there's a great like progression and customization system in the game too, where you can level up and get these basically expansion packs that have these perks in them that you can equip. And you also find this currency in the ships that you can spend to get these permanent upgrades for your character. So you're always moving forward even when you die, which is good, because I haven't gotten through the first, I only played it for maybe an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours yesterday. It's the structure of the game I don't like very much, because basically what you have to do is, in order to find your bounty, you have to collect these gems from in this first round, three different ships before you can move on to like the boss ship. And if you die at any point, you have to start the whole chain over. You only have one life, so you do get like experience points and shit if you die, and so you are constantly like moving forward. It's not roguelike in that sense, but like, I played for 25 minutes or so, and I was like killing it, and I had these like sick perks, and I like went into the boss ship with like full health and like some bombs and like an upgraded like super powerful blaster, and like I was like ready to do this thing. And the boss was like really, really very, very tough, and I died. And so, like, I still got experience points, so I could, like, take a whole run at it, but this was, like, my third time trying to get to the boss in the first place, and I don't know, it was, like, it's punishing in a way that's, like, not great. Like, I'm into Rogue Legacy, I think, rules, and I think it does this really, really, really well. This idea of, like, constantly banging your head against this wall until you sort of erode the wall with your head blood. Sure. Like, I think Rogue Legacy does it really well, but there's something about, like, investing this much time in a loop and then losing it at the boss fight, and even though you're moving forward mechanically, like, it still feels so fucking defeating. And I kind of wish
you want to feel like the upgrades that you're carrying forward are giving you like a huge noticeable impact after you do a long run like that.
And I think they are, right? Like, I can tell that my character's getting stronger. It's just like, okay, I'm stronger now. Do I really want to go
and do
three more ships just to try to get back to that same boss? I just kind of wish the cycles were more like in the micro scale, like just one ship, one big ship that you had to try to take down instead of like 3 and maybe it's just a time investment. Like, let me play for 10 minutes and if I die and I lose 10 minutes, like, that's a different beast than like 30 minutes. And because, like, and again, this all boils down to, like, I don't have that much gaming time, and the very little I do have, I basically am pouring into the sieve of Persona 5 at this point. So but it's a cool game, and I'll probably spend a little bit more time with it. I also wish it was on is it on Vita?
I know. I'm
not 100% sure.
They have brought their other stuff to Vita, so I wouldn't be surprised, but I'm not actually sure. I know it's not on Switch, because I wanted to pick it up on Switch, but...
Yeah, that would be good, too.
Do you think part of, like, what's frustrating about this versus, say, something like Spelunky or FTL is that you are able to get to the boss relatively, like, comparatively easy? Because
no,
I remember with Spelunky,
that's not
like...
True.
What?
Oh, no. I you're saying the opposite. I'm
yeah,
saying, you're
in
saying
that
it's Spelunky
easier.
Was way harder.
Yeah, that I'm saying, like, Spelunky feels like a constant build. So by the time that you get to the boss and lose, it's not heartbreaking because it's like,
well,
wow,
okay,
I can't believe I even made it there.
To be fair, there is some of that in Flint Hook. Like, the upgrades that you find are, like, randomized in the levels. So, like, when I hit the boss, I was like, oh, I'm fucking set up. I'm stronger. I'm so much stronger than I was before I started.
Yeah, but what I mean is, like, the first time you get to the boss in a Spelunky, it's after you've played, like, 30 10, rounds.
12,
yeah,
hours.
I mean, yeah, if you're an expert, like, fresh shit. But I'm saying, like, getting there so quickly in this...
Yeah, sure.
I can see how you felt, like, going in, like, well, I did it. Like, I got here in 3.
But
this,
this was not
spike.
This was not the, like, final boss of the game. No. This is just like the first like chunk of level. Again, like it's a big game and it's really polished and it's like really slick and there's a lot more to it that I haven't seen. So I don't want to like call down any kind of judgment on it. I just like I found myself a little bit turned off by this structure for the same reason. Honestly, I'm turned off by most roguelikes these days.
Y'all, this is honorable mentions. We have got to move forward.
Chris and I need to talk about one more honorable mention.
Make it quick.
What? Oh, Coop. Coop, yeah, the great. I mean, it shouldn't be an honorable mention. It should be the game of the decade.
I had a lot of fun playing Coop with you, Chris. You own the Coop. Do you want to tell folks what Coop is?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe, but I'll do my best.
Spell it for us.
It is the chess of yard games. You can have as many people as you want.
There are two sides, Chris. How do you spell this?
K-U-B-B.
Yeah,
K-U-B-B.
That's the least interesting thing about it.
K-U-B-B, that's not Cub.
K-U-B-B. Okay, so there's a field on opposite sides. You line up 5 pieces that are, I don't know, like 6 inches tall. In the middle of the field, there is a king piece. Both sides
take turns. These are just like little thick wood blocks, essentially.
And you're playing this in a yard.
Yeah, and it's a yard game.
It's a big rectangular like playing field that you have to kind of stay inside.
Okay.
Yeah. And each side throws sticks at the other side's cube, if you will. You cannot hit the king till the very end. That's like the kind of 8-ball. And if you knock it over, they throw it onto your side. And the goal is to eventually get all of the cube on your side. And you alternate throwing large sticks at the cubes. And every time this cube gets knocked over, it gets thrown back to the other side.
So you're constantly like throwing these. I think the little... bricks are called skulls. You're constantly like trying to knock over the other people's skulls, and when you do, they have to throw them over to your side, and then they have to knock those ones over before they can go for your back row. And if they don't knock over all of the like more frontwards field skulls, then you get to throw from those next time, so you get like a distance advantage. And the point of the game is to just like wipe out all of the other team's skulls and then knock down the king and win. There's a lot of like strategy and skill in it.
So it's like Lawn Darts meets Jenga.
Kind of.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit. I think
I'm not really wrapping my
head
around it. Maybe I'll just search online.
Google Coop. It's very difficult to describe.
K-U-B-B.
Yeah.
It's not Cub.
No.
How do you know that?
It feels right in the mouth. Say it. Okay. Say it. Yeah. Say it, Russ.
Cub.
Cube.
Unless there's an umlaut over the U, and then it's Coop. I could talk about... I'm still playing Fire Emblem.
Oh, Jesus.
I kind of want to talk about it a little bit.
I appreciate all the hard work you did setting up my team for me, but I just can't.
I think I might be done.
Yeah.
So I just think it's interesting because like we're coming up on 3 months since the game came out, and I'm still playing it like pretty much every day. And it's just been a fascinating look into like the world of Gachapon and like the gambling like tendencies that people sort of fall into when they play these games. I've spent $40 on the game so far, and not basically have told myself that I'm not going to spend anymore because the upside for spending money is pretty minimal. But I still find it very rewarding, and it's like a great strategy game. And it's crazy to me that like it has sort of supplanted Destiny as like the game I play.
The thing you're really deep in. Yeah, sure. I for me, it's just like all of the stuff they've added. Like as you were describing it to me, like once you started mentioning like, oh, well, this is a good character. You can break them down to transfer the skills over to this other character. But first, you need to make sure that the IVs on this other character are good enough before you invest your feathers. And once it, like, I can't.
Totally. Ugh. I mean, there's a reason I can't go back and play Hearthstone for the same reason. Is like, I played when it first came out. I knew all the vanilla cards back to front. And then I left for a while. And then they added 300 new cards.
Yeah.
And when I just, like, have, like, I'm like, no thanks. Like, I don't want to be at that disadvantage. So I get it.
Fully. Yeah. Man, I guess the new Hearthstone expansion launched last month, and like I pre-ordered like the first set of, like, you can do a pre-order when those new expansions drop, and you drop like $50 and you get 50 packs or something like that. And I did that, and I got some decent stuff, and I haven't played since I opened those
I heard it was
packs.
Kind of bogus, the expansion. People weren't happy.
Oh, I don't know. I'm worried that I may have like fallen off. I really appreciate Hearthstone. I think it's a fucking great game, but and I played it a lot actually after Henry was born, because it was like a good little game that I could like have on the iPad.
Yeah.
And just like play it wherever. But since that expansion, I haven't really gotten too deep in.
Yeah, it's tough to keep up with those games. It's just a lot.
It's like it's one of those games. Hearthstone kind of feels to me like one of those games, and I think it's less so than like Dota or League of Legends. But like, I think there's, and Destiny. Like Destiny was this for me. There are certain types of games that's just like that has to be the only game you play. It feels like maybe a little bit. Maybe I'm being a little bit like over dramatic, but like in order for you to like. I feel like Hearthstone is a very demanding game. There are types of games that are just like really, really demanding, and I just don't have the time to like do that anymore.
Totally. That's kind of why I like Fire Emblem, is that like it fits in the slots where ordinarily I wouldn't be able to play a game. Like I'm waiting for 5 minutes on the subway platform or something like that. Like it's perfect for that, and it doesn't impede on my like, you know, chilling on the couch or whatever, doing other things, which is kind of nice.
Okay. So Nier Automata, did we mention it last episode?
We mentioned that like we all wanted to play it but haven't.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it hungrily and hoping that I finish Persona 5 soon.
So it is exceptional, and it is like a continuation of the thing I think we talked about in our earlier, maybe like the first episode of our you know, this great reunion tour, of like it feels like either Japanese games are just clicking with us or in a Western audience finally, or they have like kind of found out how to be themselves without, I guess, you know, prizing Western game design ideas. But I mean, this game has so many of the weird things that you would see in stuff like a Suda 51 game last generation that was like interesting, but also super frustrating. As in, like we mentioned earlier, you can play the first 30 minutes and die and just have to start over. Or you can go down paths in the game that don't really lead anywhere, and then you have to walk your way out of them. There isn't, like, great fast travel. The map is, like, purposefully obtuse. And yet, it's kind of amazing because the game seems, like, utterly obsessed with everything being inside of its own universe. So, like, you are playing the game through, I think, like, the user experience of an artificial intelligence almost, or as if you are a cyborg, down to when you start the game, you can start it, or you can look at the actual like coding certificates of all of the software and like middleware they use to create the game, as if it's part of the canon. Like
that
as if
owns,
like a Unity license
great.
Is in canon with the game.
You get like UI elements are items that you have to like install in your body. And
you can
have
only
X
carry
number
so much, and each UI item has its own weight.
Yeah, you have to put space, use space to like have your health bar on the screen.
Is it
you
have to Tron? Install essentially, it. Like, I'm not joking. Like, is it that kind
no,
of idea?
No, so like the story is heavy. The story is about you are a cyborg who is, humans have been, they've had to flee Earth to live on the moon. It is silly. And these like alien robots have kind of just inherited the Earth, and you are fighting on behalf of humans to take the Earth back. But a lot of the story is kind of like, are you a cyborg? Like, are you just a robot?
Shit.
Do robots have feelings? Yeah.
Yeah, on Earth have feelings. There's an amazing... I want to highlight one sequence that, like, I think really capitalizes on this. You start from the very opening sequence. I mean, like, from the very jump, you're fighting these robots that are giving you hints that, like, they are much more sentient than you're giving them credit for. Like, there's a lot of hints towards that. And in one sequence... you come across a huge group of them and you just start like slaughtering them because they're the enemy and that's what you're supposed to do. And they start individually start chanting, "This cannot continue. This cannot continue." And then they start chanting it together in this very creepy, like high pitched robot voice. And then they congeal into a single like boss kind of enemy. And that chant, this cannot continue, becomes like the rhythm section of this song, this like pulsing Fuck. Song that becomes yeah. the boss music, like, and it becomes underlying, like that song is then underlying the boss fight that they have created through this chant. Like, it's amazing.
And
that
don't get me wrong, like, hot. This idea is familiar to sci-fi, but like there's such
games,
a humanist.
Games have never done it. Games don't do that shit right, though. Like, I haven't yeah. played a game that has done right by that idea.
Well, there's early on, you have another moment where you're just fighting like a horde of these robots, and they just start like saying in like the simplest, most like emotionless way, "Ouch," when you hit them.
Oh,
and it is like brutal. I mean, it's,
yeah,
like the really turrets in Portal.
Yeah,
the one thing that I will say, I'm fairly early in the game. I mean, I'm a few hours in, even though, as Chris pointed out, my playtime is like 72 hours because it keeps going when you pause. But there is a lot of running from place to place, and it's good. It feels good. It's not unpleasant to navigate the world, but there is a lot early on of hiking from like one spot to another spot and backtracking.
Did you figure out how to run? It took me a second.
Yes, I figured out how to run, and that's pretty smart. But the pace, you run really fast, but still, it's like big areas that don't always have a super clear A to B path, and that ends up being like a lot of, I think for me, for my taste, kind of unfortunate pace killing. Like, I want to get to like this cool stuff, but it's so far
yeah.
to get from A to B that it really killed the pace for me a little bit.
I will say this, and this is what I think the game does as it opens up, and this is just going off of like things I've seen from the game is meant to be played, I think, 5 or 6 times all the way through. It's short. Like, it's very short.
Oh, really?
And the game changes each time you play it. Like, New Game Plus is not just like, oh, you have better items. The game changes. I guess they're just gobs of endings, yada, yada, yada. But I think you also gain pretty real abilities that change how you travel. And I think this first playthrough is kind of meant to get you to just know what the world is, which is, like, not a defense of it. That's expecting a lot of the player, but I mean, the game makes a lot of choices that are, hey, we are really proud of this and we really want you to like enjoy it, and if you're willing to invest in it, there's going to be some real payoffs.
Mm-hmm. We should talk about actual.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Man. Yeah, I can start. I want to talk about a game called The Sexy Brutale, which I think is on PC. I know it's on PS4.
It is on PC. I put it on PC.
It is on, you played it? Oh, so you played it. Good. Yep. Good, good, good. Did you the whole thing, or did you?
No.
It's not that long.
I played a good chunk, a couple hours.
I'm going to try to describe the game. It's a little challenging, and Russ could probably help. The best touchstones I've found, well, these won't be immediately accessible, but sort of like Groundhog's Day meets Sleep No More meets Clue, I guess is
yeah,
the best
I
way
think
I can.
I mean, I don't know that how many people apart from your love of it, No What Sleep No More is, but I think but
so basically you're in this
Majora's Mask meets Clue for that matter.
How was your 11th Sleep No More experience?
It was my 8th. It was great. I got 2 private scenes that I never got before.
Whoa,
I got the nurse.
You got 2 fucking private scenes in one trip?
Oh, I got the older nurse in the hut. I had to climb under some trees to get to the older nurse in the hut. She gave me some tea from a spoon. It's amazing. Anyway.
Google Sleep No More and Coob. That's your homework, dear listeners. Yeah.
So you're a dude.
You're a dude.
You're a dude in a large sort of casino hotel. There are guests at the hotel, and there are the workers at the hotel. There are these, like, masked sort of automaton fellas. And basically, the guests in the hotel have all been killed. In the span of 12 hours, all the guests in the hotel have been killed. You have to stop that from happening. And the trick is, the plus and minus is, the minus is, you can't be in the same room as anybody. If you enter the same room as one of the workers or one of the guests, the game sort of stops and the masks that everybody wears come off their heads and fly at you to try to attack you and kill you. So you cannot be in the same room as other people. You can, however, peek through keyholes. You can listen through walls. You can hide in closets to observe things. And basically, so that's the bad thing. The good thing is, you can reset the day back to noon. It goes from noon to midnight. You can reset the day back to noon at any point. So basically, to use this sort of intro bit as an example, you have
an example.
Sorry, you have to listen to me on like a regular Rest Fresh stick over here. You have to use. Come on. You have to. There's a scientist of some sort that gets shot in a chapel by one of the workers, and he gets shot at 5 p.m. So what you have to do is there at some point while the scientist is looking through a safe, he drops a blank cartridge that was hidden away in the safe.
A bullet.
A bullet. No, a blank cartridge.
I mean, but
there's no bullet.
A blank. I understand.
A blank has no bullet. Okay. Yeah. So you pick up this cartridge and you can find, if you're quick, you can get to the gun that the hotel employee uses before he does and install that blank cartridge in there. And when you do that, when he tries to shoot the scientist, it's obviously the blank, and that gives the scientist time to fight back. So that's a very simple one. There are others that involve like watching through a keyhole as someone uses a keypad. And then that information, you don't keep items for each run, but you do keep information. So you can see people sneaking through a secret passageway. And if you do that, you then know where that secret passageway is. And each time you save someone in the hotel, it's sort of segmented. So like each time you save someone in the hotel, you get their mask, which gives you a new ability, like the ability to shatter glass or the ability to unlock any lock or whatever. And each murder is completely unique. I mean, it's completely of itself, and you have to figure out the steps you need to take. And it does very little handholding, basically none, in the sense of like, how does this person even die? Like, yeah. Where is this person? How does this person die? What steps could I take to do it? You really have to decide like, okay, on this one, I'm just going to try to find this person and follow them so I can get a sense of their story. And that's really how you ingest the stories, all through keyholes and through, you know, listening through walls and that kind of thing. And it is a very cool story that is so inscrutable until you get to the end and understand exactly what's happening. But
yeah, I really like the idea of like almost working backwards, where you see a murder and then you like see the events that led to that murder, and then you find places within those events where you can sort of take advantage of the information that you glean from reversing time.
This sounds a lot like Ghost Trick, like a lot like Ghost Trick, and that's not a knock against it. It just sounds like it's doing a lot of this.
Ghost Trick. That was like the 2D handheld.
That was like this. Yeah, that's super Capcom. Fucking slick Capcom 2D game where you were a ghost and you could manipulate things in the environment to prevent these like horrible murders from taking place.
I guess, except that like you never feel like a ghost. You just can't.
Yeah,
it's more like you're in the periphery, right? And no one ever interacts like. Until you save them. There's a brief scene when you save someone, they acknowledge your presence and stuff, but like you can't really interact with people. So it's about like exploring, like you feel like, I don't know. You don't get that sense of like, oh, there's a creepy ghost in this room. You're just sort of tweaking things a little bit to keep the murder from happening.
Yeah. I also want to mention the art in this game, the graphics are super cool. It's an isometric game that kind of looks like if you were to like, imagine like a 3D version of a Clue board, like that Victorian, like old house style, like super detailed, very
with
ornate.
A little bit of like LucasArts aesthetic. Yeah. I feel like there's a little bit of like Monkey Island kind of vibe in the character design.
It just looks,
but it's also
gorgeous.
Gothic, like a goth, and the music's fucking great too. It's a very cool world to be in. There's lots of secrets to uncover. You can collect like. The guest invitations and there's playing cards to collect and things like that, each of which, not the playing cards, but the invitations and things in the environment give you like additional information about what's happening to try to help you piece that together. But it's really, really, really neat.
It doesn't feel like anything
I've played before. And I did play Ghost Trick, so it's a little different. There's just definitely some of that DNA there, but it's very, very cool and worth checking out. It's the sexy, brutal.
I really want it.
Yeah,
God,
it's
really.
Are you ready for my transition?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
When the masks fly off in this game, do the people go, "I am thou, and thou art I"?
Oh, are we going on to the next one?
I mean,
yes,
perfect. I think that's
how it
works. That's a transition.
All right. Then I'll do my game. My game is Persona 5. It's the next Persona game, the fifth one. Well, it's probably like the 71st one, including like P4 Arena and Persona 4 Dancing All Night. And man, Persona 4 Dancing All Night was a good one.
That spin off with Fire Emblem.
Persona Q, Shadow of the Labyrinth, fucking Tokyo City
Mirage. And it fits into all the Shin Megami Tensei games.
Yeah, it's so huge. Bit of backstory, I guess. Persona 4 Golden is my favorite game of all time. And it's Persona 5 has been, what was the original release date for it? Wasn't it like
September
2013 or something? No, dude.
Oh,
it was supposed to be a PS3 title and then it got pushed back and pushed back pushed back. Came out in Japan last year and then just arrived here. And it's probably been like, every year Colin writes gets the Polygon staff to all like chime in on what their most anticipated games of the year are, and like for the past 3 years mine has been Persona 5, so I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. And it's really great. It's a very, very, very good game and one of the better designed JRPGs I've ever played. Have you all, Russ? I don't think you played
it. I played it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I didn't play 60 hours of it, but I played like the intro and the first few hours. So
I think you've probably played it the most after me.
Yeah.
And so here's what I'll say about Persona 5. It is a, if you've never played a Persona game, it is a sort of a half JRPG, half like life sim, dating sim type game. I always get uncomfortable when the dating sim part is applied to it, because frankly that part of it is kind of
it doesn't even
weak.
Appear until
it
like
more
hour
like
50.
An interactive story.
It's a visual novel meets JRPG, I think.
Yeah,
is a really Persona 4 Golden is my favorite game, and a lot of that is just like the tone of the game is really unique and the characters are so great, but I will acknowledge that the like RPG part of it was never like awesome, because these games they take place over the course of about a year usually, and so the structure of the game is broken down into days. You will go to school and do stuff there and come home from school and have some free time, unless your fucking cat makes you go to sleep half of the days. You have some free time to like go out and explore whatever area you're in and like go do whatever activities you want to do and hang out with whoever you want and build these bonds with those characters. And all of that stuff feeds back into the RPG part, which is sort of a dungeon crawler. Up to this point, pretty much randomized dungeon diving, you know, fighting enemies, getting stronger, collecting persona, which are kind of Pokemon-esque. Like, they all have, there's hundreds of them, and they have different stats and different abilities, and you can combine them to form new persona with new abilities. That part of the game in Persona 4 Golden was like, it wasn't as good as the life sim stuff. Like, it wasn't as good. For me, it feels like you play the through the days and you hang out with all your friends and you do all these like fun activities, and then it's like, okay, well, time to go to work and get in that dungeon and do the stuff. I think the best thing about Persona 5 is that, for the first time, and I've played most of the Persona games at this point, that dungeon stuff, the RPG stuff, is fucking excellent. It is like some of the best like mechanics I've ever had in an RPG. Combat breaks down into, as it kind of always has, like picking out the elemental weaknesses of enemies and exploiting them to get extra turns in combat. I think Persona 5 is especially sort of demanding in that sense, because I've been playing the game before and I didn't exploit those weaknesses and didn't get those extra turns. And then, like, if the enemies get a single turn, they can just fuck your whole party up in that span. So you really need to be very, very smart basically every battle. There's a rush mode where you can just hit start and all of your characters will just rush in and do melee attacks, and it like fast forwards through the battle. You just fucking can't do that in this game, because again, like, if the enemies get one turn, there's no guarantee that you're gonna survive that. This game does really well is it adds the negotiation system back into the game that I think has been absent since like 2. It's in all the Shin Megami Tensei games, where basically you're fighting these shadows in dungeons, and in past games it's like kind of random whether or not you collect them. Persona 4 Golden had this weird like card drawing thing after certain battles where like maybe you'd get a persona or maybe not. In this one, like, if you knock down all the enemies, you can enter a negotiation with them where you can try to convince them to give you an item or give you money or join your cause. And if you do that latter one, you have to actually, like, have a conversation with them in which you, like, kind of look at what their temperament is and try to guess what kind of answers they want. And that can be a little bit finicky, but it gets much easier as, like, a lot of the really difficult things about this game get easier as you boost up those social links, which they call confidants in this game, which is another, like, hugely improved thing where, like, as you make friends with people, basically everybody has these, like, really, really valuable skills to teach you that you're just constantly upgrading as you, like, go and get, you know, sushi with Ryuji, and then all of a sudden, like, he teaches you this new technique that's like really, really helpful. Or you go talk to a character who is essentially Bernie Sanders, who teaches you like how to like negotiate with shadows better and make that part of the game much easier. Also, the dungeons aren't randomized. They are there's one that sort of adheres to like the roguelike structure of the game that you can go into at any time, and you kind of have to like fulfill these like mini objectives. But the like main dungeons in the game are like set, and they require you to do
it's
these
like a heist metaphor, basically.
Yeah, each one is a heist metaphor that you have to like go in and like rob a bank or siege this castle. But there are like puzzles that you have to solve, and there are you know, you have to like find these unique solutions to get through the dungeon, which is new. Like in Persona 4 Golden, it was just like run and hope you run into the exit door and fight all the enemies along the way and pick up all the treasure.
And you get it's very advantageous to get the drop on enemies. So there's a lot of like sneaking from cover to cover and attacking enemies.
Yeah, it felt much
unaware.
More action-y. I actually thought that the whole intro, which you didn't really go into, I played Persona 4 Golden, and that was the first time I played a Persona game, and I put in a good 4 to 5 hours into it and like really tried a few times to get into it, and I just couldn't get over the hurdle, which is like a very, very slow intro. And maybe it's just like my taste or whatever, but I found this game, well, first of all, this game does start with like I forget the terminology for it, but like a flash forward and then a flash back.
It's a framing device where the game the game starts out sort of in the future, and right. So all of the events that take place during the game, basically, like whenever you find a new confidant, it flashes forward to this event in the future, and so the story of the game is being told from this event in the future.
Right. So you sort of have an idea of where things are vaguely going, and that makes you more engaged in the events. I also think, unlike Persona Golden, where the mystery was sort of happening, but again, it's like very low key. Persona 5 takes place in the center of Tokyo.
Yeah.
And like chaos is going, like the city is like,
so
shit
yes.
is going wrong big time.
And that is, that's my problem with Persona 5. And I should mention now that I think like maybe 2 or 3 hours away from finishing it. Like, I'm pretty sure I'm pretty much at the last dungeon. And I'm not going to get into spoilers or anything like that. And at this point, I've probably put about 90 hours into the game, broken up over the course of, like, I mean, I've played it like, I play it like maybe an hour every day. I do a lot of remote play. It's fucking great for remote play. I've played it probably 85% remote play, the rest like on my TV, which I was kind of bummed about, because Persona 4 Golden
desperately needs to be a Vita game.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's so sad being on a plane and not being able to, like, or traveling or whatever.
We went to New York for like a week last week, and I tried so desperately to stream it using like shitty hotel Wi-Fi, but I couldn't get the bandwidth. So like the mechanical part of the game is great. Also, I haven't mentioned this yet. The style of the game is like every fucking menu, every UI element, every...
It is gorgeous. It is really cool.
It's not just gorgeous. Like, gorgeous intimates that, like, the graphics are really good. Mm-hmm. It is the most fucking stylish game I've ever, ever, ever played. Like, the after-battle results screen is the coolest shit ever. Like, the first time I played, like, whenever I just hopped into the menu, like, there are animated, like, motions in the menu. Like, you see your main character, and you go to, like, the equip screen, and he, like, rotates and, like points a gun out over the menu, and then like there's shit like that in every facet of the game, and it's like so slick and inarguably like the mechanics of the game are more sophisticated, not just more sophisticated than Persona 4 Golden, but maybe more than any other like JRPG I've ever played. That being said, I don't like it as much as Persona 4 Golden, and in fact, I think it kind of has made me appreciate the things I like more about my favorite game of all time than it has, like, surpassed them. And I think a lot of that kind of boils down to the tone that Russ mentioned earlier. The game takes place in Tokyo, and... It's cool, like, being able to go, like, to Akihabara and then to the Meiji Shrine and to Asakusa and, like, all of these different, like, real places in Tokyo. But the whole game is structured around, you are a member of the Phantom Thieves who go around and... It's hyper convoluted because as all, like, big plots in Persona games are, you go into sort of the what's called the cognitive world of different adults, like different shitty adults, and you go into their palaces to steal their hearts, and in doing so you sort of change their awful desires and fix them, I guess.
Inception.
Kind of like Inception. Yeah, I think that's a decent... But all of them are framed as Justin mentioned earlier, like different heists. And so the game tries to tackle this idea of adults sort of exploiting...
Corrupted souls.
Not just souls. Like, I think it's important to point out, like, this is a game about adults taking advantage of the younger generations, right? Yeah. And you are that younger generation who is standing up for it. And it's not just like that. It's not just how the dungeons are set up. It's like every one of the confidant storylines, like every one of your main character storylines, like boils down in some way to some shitty adult is fucking something up, which is like, and I think it does a decent job at some of this. Some of this stuff. The biggest bummer for me about Persona 5 is two things. One, I just don't. This tone is it's not great. Like, I don't think it's great, and I don't think it always pulls off what it's going for. Like, Russ mentioned the intro sequence. Like, the intro sequence starts with you getting your fucking ass, like, beaten. And just the whole time, like, your character is always, like, desperately imperiled. And the world just kind of, like, sucks. And, like, a lot of the times, like, it feels like your plans don't really work out. And everybody kind of hates you. And... all of that is set up to like create this drama of like, oh, we're going to overcome this by going into the, you know, the cognitive world and stealing their hearts and fixing it all up. But like after, 90 hours of that, like, I don't know. It's not the, it's not the relaxing sort of kind of fun vacation that Persona 4 Golden was for me. And I think the other thing is like, and the bigger thing is narratively speaking, it misses a lot more, it misses a lot of its punches. Like, I'm not gonna get into like specific spoilers, but if you want to go in like totally pure, like maybe fast forward a little bit, but there's certain stuff in this game, like there are twists sort of towards the end, and one of them is something that's just like, was this supposed to be a twist? Like, there's like a character whose like identity is kind of revealed, and it's like, you literally set this up in like the second or third scene of the game. But they treat it like, and they always like return back to it like three or four times to make sure you get, this is the twist. And it's like, how is this a twist? You haven't even disguised this character's like appearance or anything like that at all. There's one sort of, appropriately enough, since this is sort of a heist game, like Ocean's 11 style thing that happens, that is somehow even more convoluted and like, okay, than an actual Ocean's 11 twist. There's also these big narrative beats that just like, it just doesn't land. Like, there's a character who has a family member die, and the game doesn't do very good by that. Like, it just kind of, this character just kind of brushes it off like it's no big deal, and then don't talk about it again. And they're, you like, whenever you see them in later scenes or you talk about the, you do like their confidant scenes with them, like they don't there's not a lot of weight to what is like a pretty like huge moment in their life. And instead they just talk about whatever like little goofy shit they talk. And it's like, really, dog? Like, your family member just died. Like, you don't want to get back to that at all?
I want to hear, Chris, did you have some of these same like tonal or narrative problems with the structure of it? Because I know you've sunk a lot of time into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have had the good fortune of stopping at maybe the right moment. I spent about, I don't know, maybe 40 hours or so.
I think we talked, and I know where you are in the game.
Yeah,
and
I'm about halfway.
A lot of this stuff is closer to the end, yeah.
Yeah, and I had heard a lot of these issues. So for me, the game has largely been fine. I mean, I enjoy it a lot. I don't mean like, oh, my experience has been fine. I
the rubric is different because you're spending 100 fucking hours with the game. Like, the rubric is different. It has to be really, really good the whole time, I feel like.
Well, yeah, and like I said, I've really enjoyed the beginning. I think also just the stuff that I'm enjoying from it is different than like what Griffin enjoyed about Persona 4. Like, I know that you dug just the location, like that vibe of like, hey, I'm out in the country. This is kind of weirdly like a vacation. You can hear the rain on the windows. It's like folksy. And Persona 5 is not that. And like Griffin said, it's very grim, and it does not always stick its landings on this stuff. I mean, each of the adults' problems is basically a rumor that you probably heard about an adult in high school. They just took it like to the furthest end. So it's like, you know, the gym teacher is a pervert. Like, that is the first one, and they take it to its furthest possible idea, and then it ends up being real. But the thing that I do really, really dig about it versus the other games, and I think kind of in general Persona games have always been good about this, is capturing what being a teenager is like in the moment, or maybe just a little past the moment. But I love how the game is all about like being stuck on your phone. I mean, so much of the game's dialogue takes place over text messages. The way that you get into these worlds is through an app. And I kind of get this sense that like, so technically you're going into these castles and you're doing these heists, yada, yada, yada. But it feels almost like a metaphor on a metaphor of how we have these separate digital lives. and that you are kind of breaking into this other life we're now allowed to have on top of the one that we have in the real world. And it like digs into Anonymous and a bunch of other things, a bunch of other communities on the internet that I like the way it does it, because it doesn't feel as, it feels like it actually knows what it's talking about compared to.
Sure.
We've got, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I mean that's it. I just dig that stuff. But I mean, will I go back and even finish the rest of the game? I don't know. I've really enjoyed what I played. I don't know if I need a whole lot more.
That's exactly where I am. I just want to weigh in real quick because we got to move on. We spent a lot of time on Persona, but it's important that the Justin McElroy take be heard.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
I think a lot of people are hungry for it. I played probably 50 hours. I think I'm about halfway through the game. I'm kind of in a similar bucket with Plant in that. I don't think I'm going to go back. I might go back, but I don't think I'm going to. My main issue is this. The localization is really bad. And for me, like, if you're going to make your game 100 hours long, you better have like you better value my time a lot. Like, you better like be really considerate of how you're using my time. And the dialogue in this game is so repetitive and redundant and like lacking in efficiency of language that a lot of times I'll like see the first few lines in a scene and then just set it to fast forward because like I get it, now you're going to like circle around these a million times over talk about this exact same thing a million times, and you're going to come back to it three or four times to reiterate what I missed earlier. And like the game, I never feel that way about the action sequences, but the discussion sequences are so tedious. It's like such a waste of time.
I've seen a lot of like, there's like a website that has like compiled some of the most egregious translation issues, the most egregious localization issues, I should say. And like, yeah, sometimes I'll hit a line that is just such gibberish. I'm like, what the like, you don't even got subject verb agreement on this one. What are you doing? and like that shit is, it's bad, but I think there is sort of a more like overwhelming problem with it, like a more overarching problem, which is what Justin said. It's just like a lot of the writing is just really flat. And that's not like a literary critique. That is like a lot of the characters kind of feel exactly the same. Like the way that they talk, obviously I'm not talking about voice acting. I'm talking about like the way they are written is kind of indistinguishable, which is a bummer. Because like the thing that this franchise does right is these really really great really like different characters that you like kind of go and you get to know over the course of this year. And it's kind of a bummer that like, and I think this also like goes back into some of the game's like punches falling flat. I also want to mention just one last thing is that like you mentioned it, the like dialogue being repetitive. I feel like just this structure of the game of all adults are shitty, so let's go in this magic world and fix them. It's how every arc resolves. Like it's pretty much every single arc resolves, not just the main arcs, but like the different confidant arcs also like more or less have the same ending. And that's kind of a bummer too. I feel like I've talked mostly about like how negative it is. Obviously like I love the game or else I wouldn't have spent almost 100 hours playing it. It's just like, I've been looking forward to it for 4 years now. And, it's like met my expectations, I guess, but it's not, I don't think it's exactly the follow-up I wanted to my favorite game of all time. That said, I do think it's maybe a little bit more accessible than Persona 4 Golden was. Like you get into it a little bit faster, and like again the mechanics aren't as like, a lot of people play Persona 4 Golden and they bounce off the mechanics of the game, which is like, sure, yes, definitely. I don't think you'll have that same friction with Persona 5, but at the same time I think the story and characters and writing and tone of Persona 4 Golden are miles ahead of P5.
I have a recommendation, and then I'll get into my game. Here is my recommendation. If you have not played Persona 5 already, you are probably not a super fan. Wait, because there are a gajillion of amazing games out this year. I have no doubt that very soon, Persona 5 Golden will make its way to a portable console.
It's got to be portable. Like, if it, I would probably still be doing that. Like, if it was on Vita, like, I would probably still be I would have a lot less. I have a lot more patience for like my time being wasted when I'm not sitting on a couch in front of a television. Like when all my energy has to be focused on that, when I'm on like a plane or driving somewhere, probably in the passenger seat.
Yeah, and also, I mean, that's the other thing is I feel bad about like I really want to play Nier. I really want to play Sexy Brutal. I really want to play more Flint Hook. I really want to play Horizon Zero Dawn. I want to play more Neo. I want to play like. I'm playing all these fucking games, but like this is literally the only game I've played all month except for the hour and a half I played of Flint Hook yesterday.
Y'all want to hear about my buddy Edith Finch?
Yes.
Edith Finch. What remains of her? The answer will surprise you. So, What Remains of Edith Finch is from the studio Giant Sparrow. They were originally contracted by Sony. I think they had like that similar three-game contract that the folks who made Journey had. Anyway, they made the, what is it? The Swan. What's the Swan game?
Unfinished
Swan. Unfinished Swan. The game was
that was a good one.
Yeah, it was a first-person game. You start out in, like, an all-white environment.
That was a paintball game?
Yeah, you fire.
Well, it started good, and then it sort of fell off the rails.
It's nice. That game. It has, like, a kind of, like, a children's book story. It's very sweet. This is their follow-up. It has been in the works for quite a long time. A lot of different people have worked on it. Sony Santa Monica, I think, dissolved parts of its studio, or at least it dissolved this contract. I don't know exactly what happened, but now the game is being published as the first game from movie studio Annapurna, who is the studio that like releases P.T. Anderson movies. And
Wes Anderson?
What?
Is it P.T. Anderson?
P.T. Anderson.
I thought it was Wes
No, P.T. Anderson.
Okay.
And... It is, it's pretty great. If the previous game was a children's book, this is a YA book. That is, like, not a controversial statement. I think it kind of aspires to be that thing. And it plays somewhat like a collection of almost Ray Bradbury-esque short stories. You are visiting this creepy house that you are the heir to in the Pacific Northwest. It's built somewhere between... I mean, it's Susian. Like, imagine, like, a spooky house, and then imagine that people just kept building rooms onto it over the course of a century, and you're pretty much there. The house belongs to the Finch family. They came to America from Norway, maybe? And they are cursed to die young. And as you go into the house, you have to learn basically how each member of the family died by going into their rooms. And every room in the house, once the person passes away, is basically shut permanently. They're like a goop.
Sealed.
Sealed. Thank you. That's a word for it. Sealed. And you find secret ways into each room. And inside the room, a perfect time capsule of where it was when that person passed. And there is usually a journal or some document that transports you into the short story of that person. And somebody on Twitter, I wish I could remember who, compared it to basically WarioWare, which I think is pretty dead
you were
on.
Say like Myst or something.
No, no.
That was like, not the direction I thought.
So the game itself is, you know, walking simulator-y, like you just move in a linear fashion from... room to room in this house, but once
you ambulate slowly, and it does a great job simulating that.
It's a very slow pace of a walk. You're not in a hurry. And why would you be if you were finally learning how everyone that could have ever been close to you died before you could have met them? So each story is like kind of has a little like. Morbid irony to it. Some of them are funny, some of them are sad, some of them are not especially great. But like
they're
taken
kind of like Edward Gorey stories tonally.
Yeah. And what I would say about the game is taken as a whole, it's kind of exceptional. It is very much more than the sum of its parts. And it's only, I don't know, Russ, it's like 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
I played about half of it. And you know how far you are because it actually keeps track of like which rooms you've gone to. And so you can, in your journal, you can like see how many people are left. So I played about half of it.
And the back half is faster than the front half. What I will say though is it's really affecting. Like it deals with some really hard and upsetting deaths that just aren't fair. And in the first half, I think it kind of, it eases you into it better than I really understood at first. I thought it was like kind of silly and hokey. And then it deals with the death of a child and a few other people that are it's really, really heavy and personal. I mean, obviously death is personal, but really heavy deaths.
Yeah, but that shit's like, I'm popping that one off the GameFly queue with that. I'm not equipped to handle that shit anymore.
It's not.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think they do a good job of making these tough topics a little more digestible because it's not like,
nah, man,
what was that, like,
you have
World
a thing
War
coming
I
up that's gonna, it's a lot.
What?
I think you have not gotten to some of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you can't really knock it for being heavy, but
no, I'm not
doesn't.
Knocking it. I'm saying it's not bad. Like it's not, it treats it with an appropriate amount of respect. And
sure.
I think like a lot of game stories don't often. At first, Russ, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that the writing seems maybe a little off at times. But
I don't, I was going to say the writing felt, for being what is essentially an interactive movie, at least for the first half of the game that I played, I think in those scenarios, the writing needs to be really, really good because that's pushing you forward. And my rubric for that is stuff like Gone Home and stuff like Firewatch, I think are both really good examples of games that are propelled by their writing. And the writing in this, there was like a lot of like, the room felt like a blah of a blah, like a lot of analogy stuff that just feels like lazy, like, and YA is right, like that's a good way to describe it, but I think there's very good YA. And there's like kind of a little bit more simplistic YA, and it felt like the latter, at least for the first half.
Yeah. So in the first half too, it seems to largely be just journaling is like the voice of the stories. You're reading a journal and that's how you're getting it. And to like give you an idea of how each of these stories works is basically the story is being, it's coming to you over voiceover and you're seeing the words appear on like in the world of wherever the new story takes place. An example that's early, so I'm not spoiling a whole lot, is like a teenager, he is swinging and it's, you control both legs with each of the joysticks, so the left leg with left, right leg with right, and you are trying to go over the bar while the story is being told to you. And that's like
it's a tree swing, yeah. And he's trying to do a 360 around the tree branch.
Yeah.
And you're controlling that. And I actually found that to be one of my favorites of what I played because it felt like really felt like I was controlling it. And it was like a very emotionally engaging experience. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. But the writing really comes together in the second half where, again, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it moves away from journaling to things like poetry that are a little more abstract or the opposite, like legal papers.
Oh, interesting.
And once it gets into that zone, it seems to like really find its voice. And again, like as it gets into the heavier stuff, having things that are either more subtle or you know, not as like emotionally forced, like a legal paper, both of those help them come at things that I think if they had taken the kind of like creative writing approach, would have just felt ham-fisted or like,
yeah,
over the top. So I mean I really like it. I think it's very interesting. Chris Bell is the lead designer on it. This is like not a game by just one person. I'm just going to use him as an example. But I it's exciting to see his career kind of hit this point. Because he started at USC, I don't know, probably about like 8 years ago, and made with a team this really interesting game that was like multiplayer, yeah, cooperative. It was very strange, but had just really interesting ideas about how you can feel a game through its controls. And then he hopped on the Journey team and then transitioned to this. And it is like this rare game where I feel like I can kind of like see somebody's, or like almost experience somebody's trajectory as their design style changes, which is a thing that I really enjoy about like music or like all other forms sure. of art, that I haven't been able to track that well in games. And I think kind of like going through these games and seeing this is really awesome to kind of really sense a kind of creative style changing from game to game.
I also wanted to give them credit for what I think is a struggle in narrative games like this, is making like the actual interactions with the game interesting. In the case, you know, at the beginnings of it, you know, in a case like Gone Home, I think it's pretty straightforward. Obviously there's some 3D manipulation, but for the most part it's like pointing and clicking and reading. And here, when you do things like, for example, you open up a book, the way you do that with a controller is you hold down a trigger and move the left analog stick to like analog wise open the book. Or you open a door like that, and there's like a variety of interactions that are like that, which are crucial to the game. And it really did make me feel like much more within the world and much more connected into what I was doing. So I really, really did appreciate that.
This is going to be a great transition to our final game.
Mario Kart!
Oh, there it was. Actually, that was a really good transition. Thank you, Russ.
Thank you. Our last game is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I guess.
Thank you.
It comes out
like
technically
today?
Tomorrow, but we've been we got some early codes for it, and essentially it is just a re-release of the Wii U version of Mario Kart with the DLC all included. But it's
so thanks
Switch.
For listening, everybody. That's been the best. Yeah. This is our last game.
If you're not right. hooked by now.
Here's what I'm gonna say. I realize a lot of people disagree with me on this podcast, but I think the Wii U had a lot of major problems and was one of my least favorite Nintendo consoles of all time. And a lot of that had to do with the logistics of actually playing it. I didn't like the controllers. I didn't, you know, the gamepad was like bulky and annoying and whatever. The reason why I think this Mario, I can't necessarily say, hey, if you already bought this game on Wii U and played a ton of it, you're going to get that much more enjoyment on Switch. But I would say there was a moment last week. We had a bunch of video people in the office. We were doing a little conference of all the video team members. And the fact that within 5 minutes, we were able to get a 6-person essentially LAN game of Mario Kart played on 3 different Switches with 6 different people in the same room
with like with no friction. Like it was no it was a fucking Nintendo commercial in that joint. Like, oh, come on and play. Okay, click the wireless mode. Okay, and we're in. Like literally fucking super 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 butter. Like buttery buttercream sweet soft honey.
Yes, and we've certainly talked a lot about the Switch so far, and I remember talking early on before it actually came out about, like, you know, what we hope for it and what we hope it actually achieves and what the commercials are promising and vice versa, etc. And I'm going to reiterate, like, I don't think I've ever seen a more accurate representation of a gaming console on commercials than I have with the Switch. And I realize it looked fucking ridiculous.
Hokey as hell,
like super hokey. Like, who's gonna do that? What party are you gonna go to where someone's gonna whip out a Switch and then a bunch of people are gonna whatever hang out and play Switch games? Like, I think the reason why, a big reason why local multiplayer games in general have had such a big problem selling is because of that barrier to entry to like get them working. It's like a hassle. Are all the controllers charged? Does everyone have a copy? Blah blah blah, blah, so on and so forth. And the fact that Nintendo has made this system so well designed for very quick, very easy local multiplayer, honestly, it makes it like a party to, like, if two people have this console with them, like, you have like an activity for the next hour for like a group of at least 4.
I mean, Smash is going to be amazing for this.
Also,
thing.
It has Jackbox. Like, it has a game that everybody who needs a controller can use their smartphones for. So, all you need is a screen, which it is.
It's spectacular.
I will say, all of this so far has been how great the Switch is. The reason we had to do that, the reason we had to create this Nintendo commercial in the office, is because still, if you try to play Mario Kart 8 Deluxe with more than 2 people on 1 Switch, the frame rate is dookie in a toilet.
That is true. So if you are planning on playing in a four-player, so four players on the same system, it's not, I mean, I think for people that are not super snobby about it, the like frame rate stuff, I'm one of those people.
I'm not
it's
super
playable. It's I'm definitely playable.
I'm not snobby about it, but then when we switch to two people on a Switch, it is like, oh, this is what it's fucking so
the
good.
Game
and
probably
it
runs
noticed
at like 25 frames a second when you're in four player split screen.
Oh damn, why did you have to say that? Why did you have to put that down on paper? Someone's gonna clock you for that.
We'll see what Digital Foundry says, but that's my guess. And it's definitely like a silky smooth 60 when you're playing with two people. And they're smart about it because if you're playing wirelessly, so
also it's
got,
not 60 when you're playing with two people. It alternates frames, I believe. So it does a
Are
frame
you
up top.
Digital Foundry
yeah,
right
it
now?
Does a frame up top and then a frame at bottom. So the whole screen I think is 60, but it's alternating frames. I think.
Well, it looks fucking gorgeous.
That's what
it
Digital Foundry really, says really something good. Like that. I'm sure I am wrong, but I think that's what it does.
It looks spectacular. I would say so. The thing to keep in mind if you're playing wirelessly, like if you have two Switches with the game. You can only do two players on each of those Switches, so you can't play wirelessly with with four players on the same Switch, but you can play locally with four players on the same Switch, which is really bizarre. We tested this too,
yeah,
where we put a Switch and we did four players split screen on a Switch, and again it was playable.
Yeah,
it's really hard because it's so tiny.
There's also a weird restriction. This is very nitpicky, where if you're playing two players on one Switch, you can either do single Joy-Cons or a Pro Controller. You can't do like both Joy-Cons in one controller and a Pro Controller, which is like actually not bad because I just played with a single Joy-Con and it's fine. Like it works really well.
Gets pretty esoteric.
But
as Griffin said, like I was shocked that like the controls with like a single Joy-Con, like drifting was no problem.
Yeah.
Whatever. Using items was no problem. Like it felt totally fine. So
to do a deeper dive into like what's different in Deluxe, there's some cool stuff. Like you have two items. You can carry two items at a time now, but you can't switch between them. But it does add like another kind of layer of strategy to the game. There's also like you can get those pink sparks now, which is
there's a higher level of drift boost. And the other big thing that I do want to mention is drive assist.
Oh yeah.
Which is basically like driving Mario Kart for dummies, to the point where like you're familiar with the experience of playing Mario Kart, you're doing like Rainbow Road or some shit and you're playing with someone or you are terrible and you just keep driving off the edge and it's very frustrating. Drive assist will basically, for all intents and purposes, prevent you from driving off the edge. But they actually balanced it. I didn't realize this until I played a little bit more. They balanced it in a few ways. One, you can't get the highest level of drift boost when you're using drive assist. It like locks that out.
Oh, interesting.
And two, there are a ton of shortcuts in all of the maps, and you basically can't use them at all. Like I tried multiple times to like drive through like a waterfall that I knew was a shortcut, and the drive assist just kicks on the second you get to the edge of the track and pushes you back onto the course. So what it's designed for is like, I think it's really great for like learning the maps, like the basics of the maps and stuff like that. But I also think like it's like taking training wheels off a bike. Once you feel comfortable with the maps, you can turn off drive
through,
assist.
Waterfalls?
And drive through waterfalls.
Yeah, I think my biggest problem with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is it feels like the thing that it spent most of its like time expanding is battle mode, which like who
I don't know how gives much a fuck? Time they spend expanding battle mode.
I mean there's new modes and like the way that battle mode works
Shine
is different
Thief
and there's
good. Shine Thief is, Shine.
Yeah but
is
there's
that
like
new?
Maybe there's like different balance things now, like you can do U-turns in battle mode but not in race mode. It feels like the thing that got the most work done on it over the original Mario Kart 8, when like I would have been happy with just like two new sets of tracks,
but like that was the thing most people complained about too.
The battle mode in Mario Kart 8 was very bad.
Yeah,
but just like
freaked out about that damn thing.
And there is the mode Shine Thief, which we didn't play in a group, but I think is much better for people, is like an oddball style, like everyone chasing the same person. And I think that could be really fun as like a local multiplayer thing. So like at least there's
that. We played a couple of new modes that were not very good, though.
Yeah. I don't know that I like battle mode anyway.
And nobody does. This is, nobody really.
But I think Shine Thief might be.
I kind of like battle mode.
Battle mode is what you play after you've done like 10 races and you're like, I'm a little burnt out. Let's try battle mode. And you play battle mode and you're like, yeah, let's go back to racing.
Races. The one last thing I did want to mention, and I'm torn about this, but I like vacillate between really, really loving Mario Kart and really, really hating it. And everyone's obviously talked about this, but the idea of like
rubber band
getting screwed. Well, no, not even the rubber band AI, but getting screwed by items like 6, 7, 8 times in a row. Like you're in second place, you get hit by a shell, you get hit by a banana, you get hit by a turtle shell, and then you're in last place.
It was hard.
And
it was hard for me to know if that was a Mario Kart 8 Deluxe thing or just like a Mario Kart thing.
That's just a Mario thing.
Like, yeah, like
I played
all of them, but in that like hour or two that we played it in the New York office, every other race, the person in first place got fucking drilled an inch away from the finish line and lost. Yeah. And it's like, I'm having a fun time playing video games with everybody today.
It did happen a lot. I think the issue is it feels a lot worse to get hit by an item than it feels good to hit someone with an item.
Sure.
So it's kind of like a net negative in terms of like that aspect specifically. There are settings and stuff like you can turn on so it can be like only turtle shells or only whatever stuff that's like you might feel is more fair. But that's just like a Mario Kart thing. And the reason it's such a popular series is this nature of like, well, you always have a shot because you'll get better items if you're in last place and crush people. I just kind of wish all it needed was like some sort of like invincibility thing after you get hit by an item where like you get 5 seconds to like get out of the way or something. Cause that when you just get hit by 3 items in a row, you just want to throw your controller out.
Also, the single player doesn't need so much of that. Like it feels to me, I can't imagine that they changed it, but it feels like it, that if you're in first place in a single player going into the third lap, you are going to get destroyed. And so much of the game has become, like, I don't know, I've only probably played like a couple hours of it, but spending the entire second lap making sure I can like get a whole bunch of shells or like bananas to play defense, So that once I do get in first, I can use it. But then it doesn't matter because if you get the lightning bolt shrink thing, it like tosses your weapons.
Right,
so
or
it's,
the blue shell, you get
it. Yeah,
anyway.
It's just this thing of like, I get what the pleasure of it is, but at a
it's
certain
like you
point,
want
it
more
feels
strategy.
Yeah, it feels like I can't even strategize to prevent it. Like if I'm really good, and that is that's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to see like what the pro like strategy of playing Mario Kart Online is. Which for what it's worth, I tested it yesterday with Nick Robinson, who's across the country from me, and like we were checking to see what the lag was like, and it was basically zero lag. Like we were doing a battle mode, and he told me when he got hit by a shell, and it was instantly. So that's very cool for what it's worth.
No, it's like technically a very cool game, and I think it does. It's a good showpiece for the Switch. Partially because like that technical stuff we touched on earlier actually works really, really well. And if you had any doubts about it, like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe will put that shit to bed. But it also like looks and feels really, really, really good on
the Switch. Yeah, and I think if you go to like a gaming conference in the next year, what it packs,
people are
going to
be playing it. Yeah,
this will like line the halls in the same way that like Smash would do the same thing. And it starts creating that same culture that we saw in those Switch commercials, which is, honestly, it's just very, very cool. I'm glad that they're really coming through on that.
It made me after I haven't played the Switch really since I beat Zelda, and so like this was a good thing for me to play because it actually makes me feel like, oh, there's gonna be more cool shit on this. Like oh, they're actually gonna do some really cool shit with this. God, I hope.
So guy, we have 4 games. Is there any that we can eliminate before we start talking about like what is the best of the month?
It's kind of a weird situation because, like, we have, I think there's just a batch of games that, like, people haven't played.
Yeah.
So I don't know that anyone is.
Yeah, I don't know, but we've been here before and I have full confidence.
I mean, I would say I'm cool eliminating Mario Kart in the sense that, like, it is a re-release of a game and people pretty much get it. And I would personally vote for Sexy Brutale of these games.
Oh, interesting.
For what it's worth.
But I mean, I would vote for Persona 5. I was hard on it, but I also really, really like Persona 5, so I would put my vote there.
That's tough for me. I think that Sexy Brutal is very cool. Like, it's very, very neat. And really, for, like, a first attempt at this sort of design, it's pretty genius. I think that Persona 5 is more ambitious, but for me, especially where I'm at as a person, like, that, it's very hard for me to stomach the just how poorly it manages time. Like, it really does feel like these games have always been this long, so that's why it is this long.
This one's even longer than Persona. I my first playthrough of Persona 4 Golden was like, I want to say like 65, 70 hours, and I'll probably be at about 100 by the time I finish Persona 5.
Yeah, I just can't do it anymore. I mean, if it justified it, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Sure.
But it doesn't. And to me, that's a really big, like, it would be very weird for me to, like, I would recommend anybody play Sexy Brutal. But there would be a lot of qualifying questions I need to ask before I would even, like, recommend dipping into Persona 5. Like,
where are you at, Chris?
I mean, honestly, I would probably say Edith Finch, only because I feel like I can recommend it to absolutely everybody. Like,
shit,
it's a game that I feel like I could recommend to people who don't play games. Which, all right,
so it sounds like Justin, Chris, and I are voting for our own shit. Russ, I think you're the
tiebreaker. No, I said Sexy Brutal.
Okay,
that's
so
it.
So there you go.
Boy, we're gonna hear about this one. I feel like, boys.
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
Well, no matter who wins, I think Persona 5 is a great game. There's no fucking way in any universe it beats Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
Let me just say, if I do, before we move on, if you're a Persona fan, who wants to complain about this, please just provide me with a skip button so I can sort of get the gist of what you're saying and then the rest of it.
To the dev team that spent 5 years making that game, tough shit.
Oh, wow.
Indie games, baby.
No.
Just to put a bow on this really quick. Somebody on Twitter said, are we going to basically make this four games for four quarters? And that would mean that I think that's a good idea.
And then we have it smart just to give us something to talk about at the end of the year, so it's not a foregone conclusion.
I think that's good. We're gonna do it.
Okay, with that in mind, I think Persona 5 is our game of the month. Then
what?
What?
How does that change the math?
Well, because I was fine with it because I thought either way it was going to get beaten by Zelda. But if we're in a new,
you thought it was a pyrrhic victory.
No, but the quarter ends this month, so it Persona would still lose to Zelda.
No, this we're in
March.
Oh, wait,
is the
369.
March is the
oh no, that's
quarter.
Not how math yeah, works. Buddy. It's the opposite.
Yeah, bud. Our 16-month-long year.
Fine, so, I'll vote for Persona. Just keep it in for the conversation.
Oh, here we go.
But now
we're talking.
Oh.
Now we're talking.
I don't approve of this at all.
Now Persona 5 is longer than Sexy Brutal. Meaning there's more game content.
I think it's ridiculous because what you're saying is we're going to talk for the end of the year thing. We're only going to talk about four games. That seems silly.
Well, I think those are the top seeds. You fool! Do you not know how seeds work?
Yeah. Have you never watched NCAA basketball?
Yeah, it's a March Madness.
Seeds.
I also like, I don't know, I kind of want to finish Persona 5 and talk about it more. It would be nice.
Oh, God.
It would be nice to have a place to do
that. Can I vote against it just so we don't talk about it more?
I got to rap. Who is it?
Oh, I thought you were going to like do a, like
a rap for
it. I'm not even going to go with that joke because I know how humiliating that would be.
I just don't, for me, the Persona 5 is very... It's very much a love letter to people who have enjoyed the series, but the fact that they, like, it's so much of it is story. Like, the majority of it is story, and the dialogue, which is the primary method of, like, conveying that story, is broadly speaking, not good. Like, just not well written.
Okay.
And
I agree.
And like, that is a huge problem.
I'm going to say Sexy Brutal. That way, no matter what, we are going to be discussing that at the end of the year. I have no doubt that Persona will bracket.
For sure.
And
Griffin,
still one
consider that Persona will be in a lower seed, so therefore we'll have a
good that's a pretty good point. Yeah,
that's, right? This is fair. Like I'm starting to feel regretful for like how much it sounds like I've just been slamming this game, which I've really enjoyed, and it's one of my favorite games I've played this year. This is absolutely a case of, and this is unavoidable just because it's been so fucking long. Of my expectations were through the roof. They were through the fucking roof, and. I don't think this is a case of like, oh, there's a few little things that like it didn't quite meet. I think there's some problems with it. But that being said, like it's still better than most games. So,
but it's not the spaghetti incident.
The what?
The spaghetti incident.
I don't know what the fuck.
That Guns N' Roses album that took 15
y'all,
years.
Y'all, my
out.
Bladder Holy is literally shit. Going to.
Wasn't that Chinese Democracy?
Wait,
Chinese
Chris Democracy is gonna piss his pants. I'm
gonna burst.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for us.
Sexy
Congratulations to Sexy Brutal, the new leading game of this quarter. Siba hangs on to that slot. A lot of great games to check out, so get out there and play some games, and we'll do the same.
What's next month?
Prey is next month. Tumbleseed is next month.
Fuck, yeah.
It's going to be another good one.
And go play Nier Automata, by the way. It's bizarre that three of the best open world games ever have come out in the past... Like this year, it's buck wild. But that's going to do it for us, folks. Please go rate and review our show on iTunes. Go read a bunch of stuff on the newly redesigned Polygon, and also find Chris Plant on The Verge. And we're done.
Also, so, there's a lot of good Vox Media podcasts out there.
Yeah, go check them all out. Until next month, my name is Justin McElroy.
No.
Wait, until next month, we'll be back with you next month for another episode of The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends play the world's best games?